Want to know what it's like to orchestrate all the moving parts of the Broad Ripple Art Fair? Stay tuned, because Sharon Gamble invited Art Fair Director Patrick Flaherty in to talk with her about what goes on behind the scenes and all year long.
So you've been at the Art Center more than a decade now.
Yeah, just about, a little over 10 years.
Whoa, that's great. And how long have you directed the Art Fair?
This will be my third year directing the Art Fair.
That's impressive. That is a tall order.
Yeah, it's all staff, and then we have, you know, almost 500 volunteers as well as outside volunteer committee members, so it's a pretty large undertaking.
Was there, when the time came for you to take the reins, did you have any trepidation? Were you like,
No, I had been, before that, I was in charge of the artists, and, you know, if you're going to have an art fair, the artists are a large part of it,
sure.
Not to downplay the other aspects of it, but I kind of, it was a natural fit to kind of move up to it. But of course, when you have that much responsibility, and, you know, it was a little nerve-wracking at first, but we have such a great team that I was in good hands.
And I'm guessing that your team, I'm assuming you have some a very strong committee, some board members, as well as your fellow staff members, and you probably have some seniority in there. Do you have people who've been helping put on Broad Ripple Art Fair?
Absolutely.
For years?
We have people that have worked over 20 years on the event.
Whoa.
We have volunteers that come back year after year after year. So there's some longevity, and everyone really pitches in. One thing I like to say about this, since this is the largest fundraiser for the Indianapolis Arts Center, is that it really is kind of like a team building event for the staff as well, because some of us, like me and some fundraisers, are working year round on the event. Some people just really work that weekend, but everyone comes together. And so there's not just me leading the event. You know, lots and lots of help and lots of people that have been involved for many, many years.
Everybody has a little skin in the game in that
yes,
way.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's been a few years since the art fair was moved off of Mother's Day weekend.
Yeah, it's been the third weekend in May now for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
So I know that change, I want to say that I was there right when that change happened.
Yeah.
So it's been a while, and we find that this weekend, you know, it's always a gamble on weather, but our hope was that it would be a little warmer, a little bit nicer.
Exactly. And I know people who just switched to, you know, people who used to shop, either take their mom with them to the art fair and say, pick out a necklace for yourself as your present or whatever. I know those people have shifted to including an IOU gift certificate in their Mother's Day card to say, I'm
idea.
Taking you to the art fair.
Yeah, better yet buy a ticket for your mother and then go together.
Hey, I love it. I love it. New family traditions. What's the biggest change you've seen over the years you've been affiliated with the Art Center in the Broad Ripple Art Fair?
You know, I don't think there haven't been, I like to refer to the event as sort of like a glacial event, in that, you know, this is the 44th year for the Fifth Third Bank Broad Ripple Art Fair. It's, you know, has some serious longevity. And so when I took over the fair, it wasn't a matter of that we were, it was a matter of just tweaking little things, trying little things. And so we're always trying to, you know, create some more buzz. One of the largest changes, we found out through some market research that people coming to the Broad Ripple Art Fair don't necessarily know what the Indianapolis Art Center is, or
really,
that it's a fundraiser for the Indianapolis Art Center. And so that became a goal to try to educate people on that. So one of the major changes I implemented was 3 years ago, we took the student sale, which was a popular part of the sale inside the art fair. We moved it outside, changed the rules around, so those artists are now actually part of the emerging artist area, which is where they sell their own work. They staff their own booth. They don't have help. They're there the whole weekend, and they're just getting a taste of what it's like to be an art fair artist without the tens of thousands of dollars of investment and risk just to see if they even like it. But the flip side of that is it opened up the inside of the building. And so we now have free as well as paid art activities all throughout the building, so that when people come in, they can get a sense it's like an open house, if you will. And so we're slowly trying to educate our patrons that this is, in fact, a fundraiser, because there's a following of people that come year after year after year to the Broad Ripple Art Fair, and what we're trying to do is to get them to understand how it relates as the fundraiser to the Art Center, which might seem like a no-brainer to you, but
for the
average fairgoer, we were astonished when the numbers came back. And so that's been one of the largest changes, is to activate the building. I mean, with all hands on deck, all the staff doing so much to just make the event happen, there's only so much we can do. But now that the faculty are all staff of the Art Center, it's opened up some new opportunities for us. And, you know, so I'm just really excited. Of course, we want you out shopping and supporting the artists and checking out the music and the food and all the wonderful things you think of the art fair. But when you come into the building, whether it's just kind of watching some artists demo their work, or whether you're going to make a seed pod activity or want to do a scratch mold and cast aluminum, these are unique offerings that you won't find at many art fairs across the country.
It's a real testament to the success of the brand of the Broad Ripple Art Fair, though, that there, for some people, is a little bit of a disconnect. So congratulations on you to figure out a way to connect the dots there. And I love being able to tour the studios. One of my favorite Broad Ripple Art Fair stories is a few years ago, there was a family with a little boy and a little girl, and they were standing watching some glass blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And this little boy, who was just like a year and a half too young to study, he just was so fascinated. The family kept trying to move him on. Let's go do something else. And he was just transfixed. And, I made a circuit of the building a couple of times, and he was still there. And I thought, oh, parents, please remember that when he's old enough to take those classes.
Absolutely. I mean, our goal would be great if people are going to register for classes, but even just subconsciously, people getting in there and seeing that those things can happen. And this is the first year that every studio will be open.
Wow.
And so, again, based on just logistics and staff and things like that, some of them will be more demo-based, like glass, for example, is going to be a demonstration, but there's going to be hands-on ceramic activities, drawing activities, the casting, and so on. And so we're really proud of our studios, at the Art Center, having really university-level studios available that the general public can then just come in and take a class. It's really fascinating how the model works. And so I'm just pleased as the director of the art fair to be able to show off that during, as a lot of events like that, they'd batten down the hatches and close all the rooms and use them for, and we're very lucky that we're
able. Use them for staging areas.
Exactly. Yeah. And we do, we do have one multipurpose classroom that we have to close off and use just because, things need to go somewhere. But it's really awesome that over the last few years, we've been able to activate the inside space so much more than it's ever been. And this year, it's full on. So really, when you're at the art fair, don't forget to come inside the building.
Absolutely. Now, but the main event is still outside, checking out the booths, checking out the stages and the music and the food, of which you have lots of great choices.
Yes.
But this is a highly competitive event. Tell me how many artists apply.
We had just about 600 artists apply for about 225 spots. And that number ebbs and flows a little bit each year, but it's mm-hmm. consistently right around that. So you've got just a little bit better than 1/3 odds or something like that. But these are professional artists that come coast to coast. We have an artist from Spain this year. We have an artist from Canada. So we're top 100 in industry rankings. We're now the highest ranked fair in Indiana, which those things can be weather-based and sales subjective.
Sure.
But we're competing on a national level, and it's bringing – and the artists understand that. And so not only is it competitive to get in, but the artists that come to the fair – the quality is outstanding with the work. And you're going to find a range from decorative to stimulating to conceptual. You're going to find functional artwork as well as decorative artwork. So there's really, and of course, lots of really one-of-a-kind jewelry and things like this. So,
and all price points, too.
Absolutely. Things you can walk out of there from, with a $20 bill and find something fun, you can spend thousands of dollars. And we encourage you to look at this as an opportunity. You're supporting. One thing that we're very stringent about is, to the best of our ability, my artist committee and I, we work very carefully to try to ensure that the people in the booth are the people that made the work.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing against small businesses or people
sure.
that have these things, but one thing we like to refer to is these microeconomies. These are one artist, one at a time, was the original mission statement of the art fair. And it's just to give these folks who really do create everything by hand, make it themselves in their studio, and then go out and market it. These are not folks you're going to find, in the mall or at box stores. And again, all those things are all well and good, but this is a really unique opportunity to meet, not only buy some great artwork, because you can do that at galleries, you can do that around town, but you will actually get to meet the story. And what happens is, we can't guarantee that your favorite potter will be there year after year because it's a juried process. But you'll see that each year we have around 30-40% new artists and then some of your old favorites. But, people do form long-lasting relationships with these folks where they come in and year after year will find and hope that this person's there. And so it's really neat how it's not just trading money.
Yeah.
There's stories of exchange. People an artist gave – there was a couple that celebrated their engagement at they got engaged at the art fair. And then an artist caught wind of that and then actually mailed them a wedding gift of a small table.
Oh, wow.
And so they get involved in lots of ways that you're not going to find that at just your typical box store commercial enterprise.
It's the ultimate story of shop local. Shop local for the art you need.
Yeah. And, these people, they are coming from all across the country. But by default, most of the people are Indiana artists. And so – you know, we just are looking at it as these are people that are, yeah, that local one-on-one contact or an artist team or whatnot. But it's not, you know, we do get that feedback sometimes from people saying, oh, you guys should be all local or all Indiana. And we've got a national scope. And I think that much to the mission of what the Art Center does to just engage people, demystify art a little bit, get people that they don't need to be afraid of it, they can participate in it. And this is a national dialogue on what's out there, what, who's selling what. So we wouldn't want to fence some of these people off because the work is just too amazing.
So pretend it's Sunday night, art fair is over, everything's been struck, everything's been cleaned up. What are you most pleased about?
The teamwork and the team effort that happens with the staff and just all the volunteers, all the committee members that make this thing happen. It, like I said earlier, it becomes like a team building thing, but it's richer than that. And it's, you know, I work in nonprofit. I've worked at the Art Center for a long time. And so I'm giving of myself in that role and appreciate the fact I get to work in art as an art administrator, as a, you know, studio trained artist is a really neat path that I've taken. But to see everyone come together and at the end of it, you know, we're all kind of having pizza and celebrating together and these things. And just it's just kind of moving that you can get that many boots on the ground for an event, and even more so to the volunteers that just selflessly come in and want to be a part of it.
Sharon Gamble with Broad Ripple Art Fair Director Patrick Flaherty. If you're not already on your way to the Indianapolis Arts Center, you can learn more about the art fair at indplsartcenter.org. Again, indplsartcenter.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Bianca Manditti is a drawing and painting instructor at the Indianapolis Arts Center. She also serves as the studio chair, and Sharon Gamble wondered what it's like for her and her colleagues to host the Broad Ripple Art Fair every year. Here's their conversation.
So what is it like being the studio chair at the Indianapolis Art Center?
It's a lot of fun, actually. I feel very lucky. I work with some amazing artists, and I get to experience people who are just starting out on their artistic journey and kind of help them with that. And I get to see people who've been painting and drawing a really long time, kind of furthering their art. I am a lucky woman.
And what? How do you get a gig like this?
Hard work. Perseverance. I went to school and I have a master's degree. I actually did a degree in performance art, so I studied art and music both.
Mm.
And then I went on and did some doctoral work. And I got kind of burned out on academia and wanted a break. And I started teaching and sort of rediscovered my love for education and art at the Art Center. And being part of that community is such a wonderful thing for myself, both as an artist and as an instructor. And so I started there and put in my dues and eventually got moved up to studio chair.
And what? Tell us about your responsibilities then. What are you juggling?
A lot. I handle really commonplace things like payroll, which isn't very exciting.
No, not really, but necessary.
But necessary. And then I help my instructors. So we do things like help them develop curriculum, setting course paths for student retention. I teach myself. Just a lot of the sort of day-to-day things. If something goes wrong in the studio, my faculty knows they have someone they can come to talk to make sure things like the easels get replaced or the tables get replaced or, you know, a lot of administrative stuff. But the most fun part of my job is sort of helping to develop the curriculum and helping to set the path for the students and, you know, kind of help people to grow in that way.
Sure. So tell us about the student body, if you will. Are there a lot of long-time students who, you know, maybe started out with a class on drawing for painters that you taught them maybe, and then they move along and they're with you 4 years later or 6 years later?
I do have some students. I have one in particular who she always starts out when she introduces herself in my classes as a groupie, which I find really
I
funny.
I love that.
But I do have some students that have pretty much been with me from the very beginning. But I also, we see new students coming in. Our slogan at the Art Center is your art, your way. And we really take that pretty seriously when we're dealing with our students. So we try to meet our students exactly where they are and help them with their journey. So sometimes a student may start with me and I might not be the best fit for them as a teacher. And so I try really hard to move them to either an instructor or a medium that I think is going to help them sort of grow as an artist and further their experience, because that's more important to me than just student retention in my own classes.
Sure.
I take their growth as an artist pretty seriously. So,
what? Just, I know this is probably hard to measure, but ballpark, what percent would you say of the students who come to the Indianapolis Art Center have some past training?
Oh, very small. I would say maybe 15-20% at the most.
Wow.
Yeah. The majority of my classes, I always ask the first week, you know, why are you in this class? What's your past experience? And the majority of my students will say things like, I have not drawn since middle school. And
aww,
they're retirees, you know, so oh, we have wow, people that have not drawn or painted since they were kids, who have the time now and decide, I want to take a class, or I've always wanted to do watercolor. And you know, so they come to us and we help them do that.
That's what a lovely thing to be a part of and to be able to witness.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
I know that pop-up classes are like, whoa, they are all the rage, and you've had huge demand for them.
Yeah.
What do you think is driving that?
Well, I think the idea that you could come in and learn something in a measurable way is very appealing to people. If you are never made art before, or if you've never painted before, and you look at taking a 4-week or a 7-week or even a 15-week class, that seems kind of daunting.
Yeah.
And the idea is, well, what am I going to get out of this? And that can be a little bit difficult to explain to a first-time student, the measurable things you're going to gain out of a longer class. But in a pop-up environment, it's pretty clear. You know, this is the goal. You're going to create this painting. You're going to do it in 3 hours. You know, you're going to have a lot of fun. And it makes it less frightening because it doesn't feel so much like a classroom environment. It's more like a party. All these people get together and they hang out and they make art. And it's this really fun, relaxed environment. And it makes the idea of making art less frightening. And that way, then, our hope is they come, they take a pop-up, they enjoy it, they see, yeah, I can do this, I can make art. And then hopefully they stay and they take a longer class with us and sort of delve deeper into their own artistic journey.
Seems like a good way, too, to try out something. This is another way of saying what you just said, that I have no idea if I have aptitude for welding or glasswork
exactly,
or whatever. So, but a one-session class.
Yeah.
Anybody can live through 2 hours, 3 hours, right?
Yeah, and then you don't have to buy any supplies either because it's included in the pop-up. And
right,
especially for something like glass, where there are tools and supplies that are needed to be purchased, you know, alongside if you take the longer class, that can be a bit daunting for people as well, that it's a larger investment. But with the pop-up, it's all taken care of in the price of registration. So you don't have to worry about, okay, what do I have to go buy or order online? You just show up, you take the class, and then if you love it, you can come back and do more.
Sure. So, Broad Ripple Art Fair weekend, good thing, bad thing?
It's a good thing. It's a phenomenal thing.
People invading your building, checking out all your studios?
Oh, we love to have people invade the building. Are you kidding me? People should invade our building year-round. It should not just be a Broad Ripple Art Fair thing. I encourage people to come in whenever, enjoy the grounds, look at the art on the walls. Patrick does a phenomenal job of bringing in amazing art. You know, the shows change regularly. I'm always shocked at people when they say to me, oh, I've only ever been to the Art Center during the art fair. That just really takes me aback because it's such a beautiful place. We have lovely grounds to walk on. You should invade all the time, not just during the fair.
And, you know, that brings up a good point. You have art that wasn't created in a studio. You have an amazingly landscaped campus.
Yes.
And I love watching people who don't realize there's a sensory garden walk in from the parking lot and have something or beep or whir at them and go,
yeah,
what's going on?
Yeah, it is pretty funny.
How do most people find out about the Art Center?
The Art Fair is one of our biggest. A lot of my students, when I ask them how they found us, will say the Art Fair, mm-hmm, that they, you know, came for the Art Fair and didn't even realize that we offered classes or we were there and had that experience and decided to come back. So that's one of the biggest ways people find out about us actually is through the Broad Ripple Art Fair, which is part of the reason why it's so important to us.
Mm-hmm. So, how long have you been affiliated with the Indianapolis Art Center?
Five, almost 6 years now.
What's the biggest change you've seen in students?
Oh, I would say that when I started, we had a very core group of students that had been there a very long time, mm-hmm. which is wonderful. But I hadn't seen much in the way of new students. And in the last several years, the Art Center has really expanded its curriculum and kind of expanded its base. And so now I'm seeing more, you know, not just people that are of a retired age, but you see younger professionals. I see more children because we have more dedicated youth programming. So I think that there's a wider variety of students there than there used to be, which is really great. The class that I just finished teaching that was on Mondays, you know, I had a wide range of ages and ethnic backgrounds, which is really phenomenal that you can see people of such diverse backgrounds coming together and kind of using the art as a bridge for communication and experience together.
Sharon Gamble with Bianca Manditti, studio chair and drawing and painter instructor at the Indianapolis Arts Center. Today and tomorrow, the Arts Center hosts its biggest annual event, the Broderpool Art Fair. You can see and buy the work of more than 225 artists, and there are great things to eat and drink, music, kids' activities, and more. And be sure to stop by the WFYI tent and say hi to some of our on-air hosts.
You're listening to a special Broad Ripple Art Fair edition of The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. Indianapolis Arts Center President and CEO Carter Wolf is retiring later this summer. Travis DiNicola spoke with him about the Art Center, his love of the Broad Ripple Art Fair, and why you'll still see him around the Art Center even after he retires.
Carter, welcome to Art of the Matter. Thanks for being here today for our special Broad Ripple Art Fair broadcast.
Thanks, Travis. Always fun to be here. Enjoy the support for the event as well, and enjoy all the things you do.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. So this is, of course, the Art Center's biggest fundraiser each year. In fact, a lot of people kind of know the Art Center because of the Broad Ripple Art Fair. We are in the 45th year. Is that correct?
We are. This is something we've worked on the last few years of making sure our identity and the Art Fair identity are the same. We have had in the past people show up and not know that
there was a building.
The fair was us and we were the fair. So we've worked very hard both in logo and promotion and all the other things we do to cross promote.
Well, there's also a lot of events going on inside the building as well, in addition to the things going on outside the building.
Well, that's another very intentional piece, because our mission is focused around giving the community access to making art, learning mm-hmm. about art, and enjoying art. And we very much want to get them inside. We'll have demonstrations, which we've expanded. We're going to be pouring hot metals. We're going to be doing a lot of things, including interactive activities inside the building to connect our mission with the larger fair.
Because you guys offer classes all year round.
All year round.
Lots of different classes. I mean, everything from, you mentioned metals, you got glass blowing, drawing classes, computer classes, painting classes, stone. I mean, it.
Absolutely. Everything. Absolutely. And anybody can access the Art Center. We, when people tell you that, well, I'm no good in art or I can't draw, I say, perfect. You know, this is an opportunity for us, because the professionals don't always come to a place like the Art Center, but people at all other levels do. And we can teach anyone to draw, Travis, including you.
Even me?
Yeah, I promise.
I need to get out there for a drawing class. You know, you and I were walking around the Art Center a couple weeks ago, and it was a Friday night, and it was packed with people doing classes, everything from pop-up painting classes to we'd stop by the ceramic studio, and, you know, you were talking with some people. I remember one student, it sounded like he'd been coming there for 10, 15 years.
Yeah, it's great activities, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm usually in there on weekends at least one day, and I'm always impressed by the people who just come in and enjoy the Art Center, the galleries that we have, the walking around looking at things like glass blowing, as well as the park, because the park's beautiful right now.
Right. Now the park looks a little bit different right now with the Broad Ripple Art Fair going on at the same time, of course.
But, a little different.
But you've got your arts park, which is just a gorgeous area behind the Art Center, the area between the Art Center and the river, as well as there's also sort of the sensory walk that's part of the east parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of great art out there, some of it permanent, some of it rotates in
right,
and out.
Right. Yes, and we'll have another rotating exhibit this summer after the art fair because last year I think there was great support for our Lee Littlefield show that was numerous pieces scattered throughout the park, very whimsical pieces, but they were one season only, and that's part of our intent, too, to mix it up with a more permanent as well as the transient pieces. And, of course, we're next to the greatest walking bike trail in the world, the Monon. And we very much want to connect people with that and be a respite for people to come off the trail and come into the building or walk through the park.
Sure. Now, Carter, this is going to be your last Broader Ripple Art Fair as the president, CEO, executive director, big hoo-ha of the Art Center, right?
Well, yes. But
yes. Did I get all those titles right?
Yeah. But my first one wasn't my first one, and my last one won't be my last one.
Sure.
So. I do plan on being both a financial supporter and a volunteer, and as well as a student.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You'll continue on, but you are retiring from your position.
This position, I've been a CEO type role for 23 years, and I'd really like a break for a while, and then jump back into. I got way too much energy and mischief in me to
I don't doubt that.
Take up golf or something.
So what's your personal favorite part of the art fair each year? I mean, you've gotten to know it, gotten to see it from all different angles. I mean, the artists, the food, the performances.
Well, you know, interesting, what I think I would really like to enjoy again that I can't as I work the fair is to kind of spend some time around the artist and then come back and relax and have a drink and listen to music and kind of music on the lawn or down by the river stage.
Sure.
Because you're in the middle of all this creative activity and people enjoying it, and put music to that mix, and I think it's ideal.
Now, how much do you get involved in terms of any of the programming for the art fair, artist selection, music, food, things like that? I mean, I know you've got a lot of great committees, but are you really involved with that part?
I feel very pleased that we have had great talent on our staff. Some of our talent started very young. We're given a responsibility and just shined. That's not a play on words. Ben Shine has taken over the music part and working with Encore presentations. And they've got some new venues coming in. Patrick Clarity and Kyle Harrington have done an incredible job, particularly being so organized early on that the pieces come together well. And I think you know that the artist selection process is pretty detailed as well. We have five
tell me a bit
community
about that.
Artists. Well, we use a program that's called Zap. It's a program where the artists submit their digital images to this program, and then we get basically a big crate with everything set up inside it. There'll be computers, there'll be projectors and things, and they come in. And so the jury is called a blind jury. They do not know the name of the artist.
Okay.
They do not know where the artist is from. And so,
and the jury is made up of staff.
Well, we try to make it. We try to have artists. No, none of our staff.
Okay.
None of our staff. Okay. We try to have artists on there. We try to have at least one person that is a buyer of art and likes to buy art. We try to have art educator in there. So we try to mix it up, and they will go through these images. They spend an entire day, and they'll go through the images based on which. Medium they're in, and the ceramics, for example, would all be done at once. And then it's all compiled. We have over 600 applicants to be in the fair. We picked 225 with a few in reserve for any cancellation. So it's quite a process. We have been ranked in the top 100 art fairs in the country for a long time.
That's great.
And in the top in Indiana for a long time as well. So we want it to be a complete and quality experience for everybody that comes, including the artists. We think they're part of our customer base, too.
Absolutely. Now, you have artists that are coming from all over the region, even some artists
all
from
the out
of the country. Is there any preference, though, given to either local artists or artists who've participated in the art fair before? I mean, because, you know, each year, I mean, there's still going to be some artists that I'm really delighted to see again because they've been there before.
We have. And those are usually artists that do not have trouble juring in.
Yeah.
Now, it does happen from time to time that they will they will get in one year and not another because mm-hmm. the jurists are different. We do have a few people that we consider kind of legacy artists mm-hmm. and have been there every single art fair. And one of the favorites is K.P. Sang.
I was thinking of K.P. Yep.
He's got incredible talent. Yep. And we actually give him that first booth when you come into the mm-hmm. field. And he's has people that come look for him every year.
Yeah, I mean, he does some just great architectural drawings. Beautiful.
And he's a great human being.
And he is. He's just a delightful man and a good person. And it's great to see him each and every year. But there's also so many other artists that it's great to see and really talented people. You know, I can't not talk about the food, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys always do a great job with the food.
We do. And we will have... constantly looking for unique vendors, and mm-hmm. it's one of the things we don't necessarily try to have the same product every year. Try to mix that up. There'll be fewer of the traditional food trucks this time.
Okay.
I mean traditional as opposed to the mobile ones. But, you know, you can't go to a fair without eating.
Oh, yeah.
What's the point?
That's half the fun.
Why not?
Right? Yeah. Now, the fair goes on Saturday and Sunday. If mm-hmm. you buy a ticket on Saturday, you can get a pass, right?
Well, if you want to come back or think you just may want to come back, mm-hmm. you can get a wristband before you leave and return the next day. We don't think you should have to pay to come back, especially when you're just thinking about buying a painting or some other piece of art. And take some time, think about it, come back the next day and buy two.
You mentioned Ben Schein is helping to organize the music. You guys got a lot of great performers this year, too.
We do. And we've got Brenda Williams, who's an all-world-class jazz and soul singer, and she lives right here in Indianapolis.
She's delightful. Brenda's just a great performer, great entertainer.
Great person. We've got the School of Rock coming back on the River Stage, and that's the school where they get high school kids involved in the process, much like the movie,
mm-hmm.
but maybe not quite as funny. But it's that'll be back. And we have all types of music. We rotate them constantly during the fair. And we have rock and roll, punk, hip-hop, folk, all kinds of variations for people to select. And, of course, they'll get a program when they come in. They can figure out which ones they want to go see and when.
Yeah. Now, the fair closes, 6 o'clock on Saturday?
6 on Saturday, 5 on Sunday. Sunday night's the big magical teardown, which is an art in itself. And it's Saturday is from 10 to 6. Sunday is from 10 to 5.
You guys ever think about going later into the night on Saturday at all, or... We've
talked around about that. We also talked about having it kind of meld into a concert on Saturday night. One of the problems is human resources.
Sure.
And we've
It's a long weekend for all the staff and volunteers.
We're there, 6 in the morning, and so part of it is that I think too is that even the artists, as much as they'd like to. In their minds, do something after they close the booth.
Yeah,
they're pretty tired, and they've been working hard. I would imagine they are.
Yeah, I mean they're working all day long. And
absolutely.
Stuff. We mentioned the volunteers. You got a lot of great volunteers.
We have 500 volunteers. That's amazing to me, and a lot of them are regulars that come back every year. And it's just what makes it work. And some of those volunteers are also part of some of our sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, Fifth Third Bank is the title sponsor because it is the Fifth Third Bank Broadway Art Fair. And they are so good and everywhere. They're very engaging. They don't just sit back and donate, but they're very engaging in the process. And they have a booth there on Saturday and Sunday. And that's been important. One America has been a longtime supporter. They've really strengthened our base as well as being a reliable, and they do so much in the month of May. I don't mm-hmm. know how they do it all with the race and the parade and the whole
parade
festival.
And the mini marathon. And
everything. And then we have people like Brian Short from Prism who is comes and they set up all the kids' activities and the art tents for kids. and they are there. Their people are there all weekend. So that's a very direct relationship. And this year we've got a new sponsor in Sun King Beer, and I don't think anybody doesn't know of Sun King anymore.
Well, we love Sun King, you know.
But they also participate rather than just sponsor. They are had activities at their brewery on Friday night and promote the art fair. They've done a lot of promotion. You'll see a lot of media promotion, for example, in the print, and some of that is ours, and some of that is Sun King. So that's a very beneficial kind of relationship.
One thing that's really great about Sun King is they've made a lot of their marketing about working with local not-for-profits and organizations.
Absolutely.
And events, and
Absolutely.
Really, you know, getting involved in the community. I mean, that's really how they get out there. And whether, you know, I mean, Sun King has been involved with my organization, Indie Reads. I know they're also involved right now with the Wicked World of Croquet at the Harrison Home.
Yeah.
They're involved with your event and lots of other things all the time.
Well, they're real community partners. I mean, it's a term that's used a lot in a lot of ways, but in like WFYI, they really want to be partners. They really want to support the nonprofits and particularly the arts in Indianapolis, and they are just have an attitude that is contagious.
Carter, I want to ask you what is as you're enjoying this year's art fair. What's something that you would recommend that someone who's coming to the art fair today or on Sunday do not miss?
Wow. Do not miss?
Do not miss. What's your do not miss?
Well, the art is the draw, and it's an opportunity that the art comes to you. You don't have to go around to 100 galleries to find things that you would finally have to narrow down. And that is a real benefit of art fairs, and this one particularly because the quality is so high. But it's a lot to cover that. My first couple of years, I went around and talked to each artist. And by Sunday noon, I was still trying to cover the So, you know, taking 2 days to do that or focusing on one area and then coming back the next time.
Also arts organizations, too. And we should mention that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, pretty much most, you know, every arts organization in the community has a booth, information booth up there about
WFYI.
Their summer programs and season tickets.
Art of the Matter.
You got it. Stuff like that. Yeah.
What could be better than that?
Exactly.
But, and Indie Reads, boom, boom, boom.
That's right. We're out there, too.
Yeah. So we very much feel like we're a partner with other nonprofits, and we hope they feel the same way. And they get in. Most of our revenue comes from ticket sales and booth rentals. Mm-hmm. But with the cultural booths, we just charge them the cost of running the tent. So it is... It is a way to connect with them and help them connect with the art fair.
That's a really important thing. And, you know, last thing, and too, just want to remind people, too, that your ticket price for the Broad Ripple Art Fair, that goes to support the programs that the
Absolutely.
Indianapolis Arts Center offers through the community. I mean, because, you know, all those great art classes, the building, the galleries, the work that you guys do, you also do a lot of outreach programs with kids, I know. That's all supported by the tickets from Broad Ripple Art Fair.
It's very important. I know people come for fun, but buying a ticket is supporting the Arts Center. I think the... And our prices stayed pretty constant. We're $15 at the gate, $13 in advance at Fifth Third Bank. And I think you can, for $15, you know, that's what it cost us for a good seat at the Indians game. And,
right.
And that lasts just 3 hours. So compare those values.
Well, you know, Indians ticket's pretty good value, too. But
It's
but
a great value. I'm not saying it. But in relative sense, we've maintained our... Our pricing, we think, is still affordable.
Absolutely.
And obviously...
and it's going to a good cause.
Kids' prices. At wonderful cause. We are 80 years old this year. And I know you weren't here when we started, but sometimes I feel like I might have been 80 years old. And that's constantly working on being more accessible to our community, more people in the community, accessible in more ways in terms of economic accessibility, social acceptability, cultural acceptability. I can't say
accessibility
it anymore.
There? Yeah.
Accessibility.
There you go.
Thank you.
Well, Carter, this is a great Broad Ripple Art Fair once again, and also I just want to say congratulations to you on the work that you've done during the past number of years leading the Arts Center, and I wish you the best in your retirement coming up this the end of this summer.
Well, thank you. You probably won't be rid of me yet, Travis. I mean, this is...
This is not the end.
Yeah, we're too friendly to disappear. So,
looking forward to spending more time with you in your retirement.
Thanks,
Carter.
And thanks for this show.
Travis DiNicola with the Indianapolis Arts Center President and CEO Carter Wolf. You can always learn more about the Arts Center at inplusartcenter.org. That is INDPLSartcenter.org. And when you're out at the Broad Ripple Art Fair this weekend, be sure to stop by the WFYI 10 and say hi to some of our on-air hosts.
This spring, painter Justin Vining has been in his new studio at the Harrison Center a lot. He wanted to make sure he had plenty of fun art to offer the visitors this weekend's Broad Ripple Art Fair. Sharon Gamble lured him out of the studio for a few minutes last week to learn how he gets ready for such a big event, why his new studio is inspirational, and how law school led to his career as an artist.
So, you've been in the studio a lot getting ready for the Broad Ripple Art Fair.
I have been. I've been putting very long hours in. I've been, working on almost all new stuff for the show.
So, is the work you're working on for the art fair? And I'm always curious about this with artists. Are you creating pieces that kind of go together as a suite, or how does that work?
Yes and no. This will not have a consistent theme like a traditional gallery show would. It is more just I'm painting whatever I want. The style is consistent. It's all going to be watercolors on handmade paper. But I've just sort of, if I've had an idea, I've been running with it. So as far as a consistent theme, no.
So people might recognize your name from having been on The Art of the Matter before, but I want to remind folks that you have an unusual background for a visual artist.
I do.
I mean, it's not unusual to find an Indiana artist who grew up on a farm or in a farming community, but to find one who went to law school is a little unusual.
It is. I don't know of any other full-time artist in the state that is also a licensed attorney, so... Yeah, it is a little bit non-traditional.
So walk us through that progression. You taught right out of undergraduate school.
I did.
Did you teach art?
I did. I taught elementary art for 3 years in Pendleton, Indiana, and loved it. But my younger brother just graduated undergrad and decided to go to law school. So I went with him.
Say more about that. Had you always just thought, maybe I'll go to law school? That kind of intrigues me.
The background, I've actually always been interested in local politics.
Okay.
So I grew up in a very small town, but one of the towns near us, Warsaw, Indiana, which is, medium sized. I always thought it'd be cool to get into politics at that type of level, at the city level. But obviously I've not pursued any of that. But that
yet
was where my interest in law school sort of came from.
Sure. And you're a step ahead if there's copyright infringement that comes up with your works, I'm sure, right?
I haven't specifically had too much problem with that, but running in that circle with artists, a lot of my friends and peers have. So I've on occasion helped people with those types of situations. Yeah.
Sure. So your style, your work is so exuberant. It's just so fanciful and full of energy. How did you develop your style?
Thank you. Yeah, this is a good question. And I get this question a lot from other artists, it's particularly because I believe at this point it is becoming very distinct. It's been a very slow progression and a slow evolution over time. So I really think even my work I was producing 15 years ago, an undergraduate at Purdue, I think the voice is still there today. But I think over those 15 years, constantly evolving, and even though some of those years I wasn't producing really any work, I would have considered myself a hobbyist at best, especially while I was a teacher. But I think being influenced by everything around me, and especially, my 3 years when I was an elementary art teacher, I think those years, you know, knowing that, I really think you can see that in my work now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a slow evolution.
How did you decide that painting was the right medium for you? Did you experiment with sculpture? Did you try other things first?
So my background, my undergrad is all drawing. It's heavy drawing, mm-hmm. lots of life drawing,
mm-hmm.
And very, very little painting. I only took one painting course in undergrad. And I guess to answer your question, I think painting maybe found me. And what I mean by that is I don't know. It just sort of happened. There was a time, and I know specifically when it happened. So while I was a teacher, I painted some of my own. But those paintings, I think they looked primitive. They don't look like my work does now today. But there was a time during my first semester of law school when I really needed a break, and I started painting, and that work looked so different than anything I had done before.
Really?
And I really can't pinpoint why or what happened, but that was sort of the moment where a light bulb went off, and I was just like, you know what, this looks different, and I think I could sell this, and I did.
And was that watercolor?
So it was. That was watercolor on paper. So, yeah. And from there, I kept painting and I kept selling. And you know, by the time I finished law school, I had sold hundreds of paintings all over the world and put myself in a position where I could really consider this as a full-time career.
Yeah. How do you get your inspiration? Do you paint from life?
No, not anymore. I almost paint exclusively from my mind. Sometimes I'll go out and I'll be influenced by specific farms I see out in the country. So I'll do scouting trips. I'll take my camera out, and my hobby is photography of all things that I consider. So, but I'll go out and
that's
I love
to play on the other side of your brain, right?
I love to go out and shoot farms and take photos of the beautiful Indiana landscape. And so I'll bring some of that inspiration directly back into my studio. But a lot of times if I paint a farm that's an Indiana farm, I'll take it out of its existing context and put it into a more surreal landscape that is you know, become sort of expected in my work.
Mm-hmm. So maybe the farm isn't on the ocean, but in your painting it's on the ocean.
Well, I haven't put one by an ocean, but yeah, I mean, essentially, most of them are mountainous, hilly, lots of exaggerated perspective. Generally, people think of Indiana as flat, and my work is very rarely flat. There's usually a lot more dynamic movement and skewed perspective in rolling hills.
So at the art fair, or any art fair, or online, do you ever have trouble letting go of your work?
All the time, yes.
How do you make it happen?
Well, now that this is my full-time income, pretty much it's expected every single thing I create is to sell.
Right.
And so going into it with that mindset, there over time you become a little bit detached from the notion that you're going to keep it. And so I guess it has in some levels. It's gotten easier, but there's certainly, like, I just went on vacation and painted a couple paintings, and I'm really torn. Part of me really wants to keep them for my private collection, but there's another part of me that's, well, you know, this is my career. This is what I do. So part of me is, you know, I should probably sell these. But I don't know. You definitely get torn sometimes, so it can be hard.
Do you photograph all your work?
So I do, yeah. So I take really good photographs, and if it's small enough to be scanned, I'll certainly scan it. But if it's too big, I have everything professionally photographed. So, and I've at this point, I know what I'm doing when it comes to that. So
sure. Hey, you moved your studio recently to the Harrison Center. What's that like?
Oh, I absolutely love it. So for the first sort of 3 years I was out on my own, I had a studio by myself, and it was one of those things. I don't think I realized it until I moved to the Harrison Center, but one of the things that I was missing the most was a sense of community and to be surrounded by like-minded people. there's challenges that are very unique to this profession, especially as a full-time artist, that, you know, now that I'm at the Harrison Center, I on a daily basis, you know, have conversations and share, and, you know, you're around people who are also facing these, you know, similar challenges. So it's, you know, I've been loving it, absolutely. And the support, the community there is unbelievable. And I, you know, in hindsight, wish I would have moved there 3 years ago.
Sharon Gamble with artist Justin Vining. Justin is just one of the more than 225 artists with booths at this year's Broad Ripple Art Fair. There's food, drink, hands-on arts activities for the whole family, music, and the WFYI tent. Stop by and say hi. You can learn more at IndianapolisArtsCenter.org. It's spelled IndPLSArtsCenter.org. Or just come out to 820 East 67th Street. It's just east of College and north of Broad Ripple. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Thanks for being with us for our special edition of The Art of the Matter. Please listen to us next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll find out about Clues Hall's Hearing Seats.
I'll get a preview of the Harrison Center's Independent Music and Arts Show this June.
And I'll take a look at the new Glick Glass Show at the IMA, and we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, and enjoy the Broad Ripple Art Fair today.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.